Welcome to Real Talk. It's 11 o'clock, and you're listening to the voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and I'm here with our second episode of Real Talk in the month of Women's History Month, March. We're honoring women, and this show will cover women throughout March, but after March, anything goes. We're here to talk about anything that satisfies or that piques my curiosity and yours as well. So if you have suggestions for topics for Real Talk, write to kaya.boding, that's kiya.boding at voiceofvashon.org. She is my beloved producer for Real Talk, and she will help us develop the topics of your choice. Today, our topic is women and madness, and how has mental health or the lack thereof been used for and against women over time? Our expert guest today is Antonia Green. She's a psychotherapist who works here on Vashon Island and in Seattle. Welcome, Antonia. Can you hear us?
Hi, yes, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We called this show Women and Madness, not just to be provocative, but because women and women's special qualities have been deemed insane over time. What do you know about this, and what can you tell us about the use of sanity or insanity in the struggle for power and domination?
Well, certainly, I think that, you know, one of the things that we have to look at when we're looking at the term madness is, what is madness? You know, what is true insanity, which does exist. People are schizophrenic. People do have breakdowns. And so, you know, we have to look at the fact that there are real cases of madness. And then, how have these cases been used against women, which they certainly have throughout time. We can track it in Western civilization all the way back from the witch trials in the 1600s all the way to our political situation now.
Tell us, what sort of parallels can you make between the witch trials and today?
This is a very hot topic, right? It's a very hot time right now. We just had our first woman presidential candidate lose to a white male patriarchal person. And why?
Well, and there have been allegations that the Republican Party, the conservatives of this country, have been, quote, warring on women. How can you point out some examples of that? What would people call the war on women today?
Well, throughout time, I mean, so I can quote August Strindberg, who said, "Men and women are natural enemies." the playwright. And is that true? Certainly, I think as long as there is a struggle for power, as long as there's oppression in the world, there's going to be a struggle for domination. I think that as women are rising, and I do believe that this is a time of the feminine, coming more and more fully into our present and into our future, the more we're going to see resistance against that. And certainly anything or anyone that challenges the male patriarchal dominance of culture is going to be, is going to be challenged, and women are being challenged right now.
How does that show up? What kind of challenges are there to women that we may not see as just structural in society, but deeper than that, more underlying? What sort of challenges do you still see?
Well, so I see it, certainly in the workplace, where an aggressive woman or an assertive woman may be called derogatory names, mm-hmm. or seen as, seen as nasty, or I guess I can't say on the radio.
Actually,
the
I did say
dog name.
Yes, right.
And where a man with the same behavior would not be considered as such. I think that we are objectified all over the media and through the fashion industry all the time, pornography. And it shows up in, certainly in women and girls that I work with. There are issues of lack of self-worth, lack of self-esteem, extreme body issues, dysphoria, depression, anxiety. It goes on and on.
What do you see as the sources of depression and anxiety, which I understand are more prevalent? Are diseases more prevalent among women? Why?
Yes. Well, there are statistics that show that more women show up in therapy for issues of depression and anxiety than men. And why is this? Well, first of all, we don't really know, because more women go to therapy. More women go to therapy probably because women are more accustomed to talking about their feelings, and whereas men are not. But through the history of women, what we see, and which is really, it's undeniable, that the oppression of women has been prevalent, since certainly in Western civilization, since the dawning of the Catholic Church, Catholicism, didn't do women any favors. And issues of trauma, rape, abuse have been prevalent throughout time and exist even into our time, and they're prevalent. They're among us. And, these issues, these experiences, produce in women symptoms such as insomnia, flashbacks, phobia, panic attacks, as I said, anxiety, depression, dissociation. Sometimes you'll see kind of a numbed toughness. Goes on and on. Amnesia, shame, guilt, self-loathing. We're seeing an increase in women and girls self-mutilation, cutting, social withdrawal.
And these things are not prevalent among men, right?
Well, the statistics are not in. Certainly what we have, certainly there are men who experience these things. Certainly there are men who are in therapy for these issues, but it's not as prevalent. And more so, men will show up for treatment for alcohol and drug abuse. Somehow there's less of a stigma around or anger management for these things than there are in some of what we call mental health issues.
We're having a little trouble hearing you. Can you move closer to your phone?
Yeah.
That would be good.
Is this better? I'm on. Okay.
Yeah, that's a little better. When I hear you talk about the situation of women and anxiety and depression, it makes me think, I keep trying to identify the source. Is part of it vulnerability, when you talk about trauma and memories thereof, also the susceptibility there too. How does the vulnerability of women in society contribute to anxiety and depression?
I'm not quite sure I'm understanding the question.
Vulnerability, the fact that women are quote, the weaker sex, they are raped, they are physically abused, they are vulnerable to discrimination in the workplace.
Right.
Does that vulnerability, is that one of the sources, could it be one of the sources of anxiety and depression?
I mean, you know, when you're always, if you are living in a situation where you always have to watch your back, which as women we do, you know, that causes anxiety, it causes a sense of vulnerability, it causes a feeling of lack of safety, and so on.
At what point in human history did society begin to devalue those things that are attributed to women, like intuition, natural healing, the closeness to nature, even childbirth? When did all that get devalued?
Well, you know, I can't answer that question fully because I don't know too much about, you know, the role of women before the 1600s. I think that in indigenous cultures, in some indigenous cultures, up until certain times, women were more valued. In the 1640s or so, and again, you know, this was the advent of the papal power in the Catholic Church, was where the witch hunts began. All throughout Europe.
Oh, they began with the Catholic Church.
Yeah, they did.
Ooh, keep going.
Well, in the early 1500s, the Reformation.
Yes.
So, and it's not just the Catholic Church. So the Reformation, which was the split between Catholics and Protestants, showed a very strong increase of mostly women who were hunted and killed during that time. The rates, the execution rates soared. In 160 years from the 1500 to 1660, there were between 50,000 and 80,000 suspected witches executed.
Wow.
80% of those were killed. That were killed were women. So many of these women were midwives. They were herbalists, or they were somewhat marginalized. Most of them were very poor. Socioeconomic issues, you know, have always been part of lack of women having more power. Sometimes they were convenient ways of getting rid of a woman who owned property. And once she, there were specific, I'm not sure how, what this was called, but there were specific allowances for women, there was dowager or something or other, whose husbands died, whose property then could belong to them. But if they were accused of witchcraft and executed, then their property became part of the state or went back to the brother or went back to the father. So these were sometimes executions of convenience.
Yeah, it sounds to me like economics has played a great role in this oppression of women.
Right.
In calling the witchcraft, for instance, madness. Well, this is Real Talk, and we're talking to psychotherapist Antonia Green about women and madness. And we are here in part because of Dogwood Associates. Since 2002, Dogwood Associates has been providing professional and confidential tax services, IRS representation, and accounting services for individuals and businesses on Vashon and beyond. And we're grateful to our underwriters because they keep the lights on here at KVSH and allow us to have Real Talk. It's 11:15. As recently as the 1950s, assertive women, if they were in the wrong place, were given lobotomies to calm them. What did you learn? What do you know about that? How did that practice, how did that idea come into practice? And how was it sort of directed toward women?
Well, during that time, and before that time, women were institutionalized, sometimes for convenience sake. If a husband grew tired of his wife and maybe had a mistress, and she became quote-unquote excitable or upset or depressed, or even sometimes creative women, women who were excessively creative, would be institutionalized against their will, and they were given lobotomy, if you can believe it. Rosemary Kennedy, the sister of John F. Kennedy, was one woman who was given a lobotomy and rendered profoundly intellectually disabled as a result.
Could you just briefly explain to folks what a lobotomy is? Not everyone knows, maybe.
Yeah. Well, a lobotomy is quote-unquote brain surgery, where they literally opened up, and from my research, supposedly, the instrument was nothing more than something that looked like an ice pick, which little holes were bored into the brain, and parts of the brain were disabled. We remember the movie with Jack Nicholson, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes, right.
And how Jack Nicholson, his character, was lobotomized in the end. And it was not questionable whether he was actually insane.
Whether it was a medical requirement.
Exactly.
And that was used with women. I'm surprised to hear about Rosemary Kennedy.
They were performed in the hundreds in the 1930s to the 1960s.
And was this, when it was used with women, was it because they were either too assertive or too excitable?
Too excitable, too assertive, you know, maybe too masculine, maybe too creative, you know, didn't fit into the model of the demure Victorian age, Victorian to 1940s woman.
I was thinking that this sort of thing had its roots in Victorian society, and it made me think of Sigmund Freud and his analyses of women as hysterical. What can you tell us about that? What did Freud do to us?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, so Freud gets a bad name in our modern culture, and, you know, there were many, many ways in which Freud was quite brilliant. And we wouldn't have psychology as we know it, and it's continuing to grow. It's a very young science, really. It's not for Freud, people like Freud and Jung. And essentially, I mean, Freud was treating women, mostly upper class society women, who wore corsets, by the way, and probably weren't reading enough. And, you know, and he was finding that these women, you know, that he was labeling as hysteric. But if we look at who these women were, I mean, these were women who were who had no rights. They couldn't vote. They couldn't think for themselves. They were the property of men. They were the property of their fathers, their husbands, or their brothers. They couldn't move outside of society. And who wouldn't be hysterical?
Right.
I'd be hysterical if I couldn't move or think or create or express myself.
It sounds like, when you describe that, it sounds like a description of some of the societies we now know of in, say, Afghanistan and even Saudi Arabia, where women are similarly restrained. There was a sexual component to Freud's analyses of women, too. Did he not coin the term nymphomaniac?
He did.
And
he did.
What was that?
Well, what was that? I mean, you know, if we think about it, I mean, I don't have a specific sighting, but I can say that, you know, women's sexuality was completely repressed at the time. I mean, women were supposed to be sexual only with their husbands for procreation reasons only. You know, there are even sites where women in the Victorian age were given clitorectomy.
Wow.
Which would cut off any sexual pleasure in a woman.
So they knew what they were doing.
Right. So, you know, if a woman was considered a nymphomaniac, well, maybe she was experiencing a reaction to normal sexuality being completely and totally repressed.
Because she was supposed to be only receptive to sex, not...
Yes.
Proactive, if you will.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She was supposed to be only receptive and not proactive and, you know, want it when he wants it, so to speak, and not really want it. And, you know, I mean, it's a very serious topic. And I think that many women, even today, are, you know, still caught between the modern world of sexuality versus, a sexual promiscuity and beauty and, you know, the world of marketing with the, you know, I think still many of us still carry the guilt and shame of sexual repression. Through our upbringing, through religion, through education, and so forth.
The idea that a woman is either a mother or a whore.
Exactly. The split. The mother whore split.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we even see this in religion where, you know, the only iconic goddess that existed after the, you know, again, after the church, I don't mean to put the church on trial here, but, you know, was the Virgin Mary. But the only way that they could have a divine feminine was she had to be a virgin.
Yeah, and she became a mother as a virgin.
That's right. That's right. And then we have, you know, and then the other was the, you know, Mary Magdalene, who was co-opted by the Bible, I believe, as a prostitute, which some people believe she was not.
Hmm. Some people believe that she was actually Jesus Christ's wife.
That's right.
Who knows?
You know, and before the Catholic Church, and in Rome and Greece and Western civilization, the goddesses had a tremendous amount of presence in culture. And the goddesses were, you know, many of them were deep, strong, empowered women who had a voice with the gods. So it's interesting to see how that all got shut down when all of the other religions were considered paganism and not viable, no longer viable.
And those,
and they were male-dominated.
The religions after paganism were male-dominated. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
So prior to that,
it was
more nature-centered and women had a greater role. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, it would be accurate, although, you know, I have visited some and worked with some tribes in South America, and I can't say that I see a great empowerment of women there either.
No.
So certainly there was a more reverence and openness to the idea of Mother Earth, of nature, of intuition. But how much actual power the women had or have, I'm not so sure about that. Certainly women always had, in tribal cultures, always had their own separate, cults, their own separate groups where their rituals and where their rites and rituals were celebrated among women. I think that that's one of the things that we're missing here in our culture now is that women are not supporting women.
And it seems to me too, when you talk about those indigenous societies, they still had that sisterhood, and with that sisterhood, they did influence men. And so somewhere along the line, men accepted that influence, but did not honor it or give it position. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, I would say that's probably true, yeah.
So kind of fast-forwarding, the leaders and even the participants in the women's movement of the 60s and 70s were labeled aggressive, crazy, subversive, and many other pejorative names. What can you say it is that in our culture, among men and women alike, what is it that our culture has feared about the power of the feminine?
Well, what if women rose to power? What would happen? Mm. What would happen to our culture? What would happen to male-dominated culture, society? What would change? No.
What do you
see?
Yeah. What do you think would? what do you think would change?
I would really like to see what would change. You know, I mean, certainly we are all part. We all contain elements of masculine and feminine, and you know, there are not so good women, and there are not so good men. Mm-hmm. You know, and vice versa. So, you know, I don't want to take a strong stance against. Men, not anti-men, but by the look of the world today, I'm married to one, but by the look of the world today, I don't have a lot of faith in masculine leadership, and I think that I would love to see women in leadership gain more and more influence in the world.
What do you think women have to do to gain that influence? Do we have to change?
Yes, we have to change.
How?
We have to change. We have to each do our own part, however we can. We have to heal ourselves. I think it's always an inside job. You know, we have to heal the wounds of the past as best as we can. And then we have to help each other heal. We have to empower our friends, our daughters, even our mothers, to present ourselves without worry, without fear, and you know, be mad if it means be mad. You know, express ourselves, be creative, step up, stand out.
Yes. And revitalize sisterhood, perhaps.
Absolutely.
In that support.
Revitalize sisterhood. That's so important. Yeah.
We are talking with Antonia Green on Real Talk. And Antonia, we have run out of time. There's so much.
I have one very quick quote. Do I have time?
All right. Let's hear it.
Okay. This is by Emily Barante. I'll walk where my own nature would be leading. It vexes me to choose another guide.
Perfect. That's such a perfect close. For women, you are not mad. You are real. And Antonia, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here on Real Talk.
Thank you, Susan.
March is our month to honor women during Women's History Month. Please join us again next week when we'll be talking about women and body image here on Real Talk.